What home sellers and appraisers think a home is worth continues to get further apart. We're going to talk about that.
You're about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
What do you seem to understand? I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California and member of the National Association of Realtors. But please, don't hold that against me. Back with you once again to explore. Well, you know, the universe, the world is our oyster. We're after all of it, right? Well, today's show is going to be pretty much focused on the real estate thing. Yesterday's show was sort of the first one in the broader success kind of thing. I thought it was a pretty good one. You know, and after the show, I realized I had used an example in my personal life. And my point was is that you can use that strategy to change how you can do anything, right? It's not just limited to whether or not you're cleaning up your clothes or doing the dishes. But just by making little changes, you can – like for instance, to make it applicable to something you might be working on. To use the example of the friend I have who's working on a children's book, take 30 minutes out of every day, schedule it, and make it time you'll work on that project, right? Whatever it might be. And we'll talk about other things relating to just personal success and things to sort of realize going into it. And there's so many things that we let stop us. It kind of blows my mind. I've talked to some people with great ideas for great things. And when I ask a few more questions about what stopped you, or what was the thing that made it not happen? Are you still working on it? You know, I'm really surprised at some of the answers that people sort of accept. So we're gonna see if we can come up with strategies to work through some of that and blow through some of that, and hopefully I'll be able to share some of those stories with you here. Interesting news in the RSS feed. So I'm sure probably no one has noticed one way or the other, but the RSS feed did not successfully get switched off of Blog Talk Radio or off of Blog Talk Radio. So let me give you a little history. So this show started in 2007, January of 2007. About 2 or 3 years later, and so I had an RSS feed then, obviously, and I used a thing called FeedBurner. And what FeedBurner does is it sort of sits there as a middleman. It can be a place where you can point people to go get your RSS feed, but it then points to another RSS feed. So no matter what my RSS feed does for my actual content, I can always have FeedBurner listening to that feed, and the URL for that RSS feed will never change. So I could give it to iTunes, and I would have 100% control over what iTunes sees. If I decided to change the RSS feed of my content, since iTunes wasn't pointing to that but was rather pointing to this middleman, I would always have 100% control over my RSS feed. When I started having an interest in doing a live show, Blog Talk Radio was the easiest way to get that done. You sacrifice a little bit in terms of audio quality and some other things, but it looked like a good way to go. So I went ahead and jumped on board with them. But before I did that, I tried the free version, and I had a conversation with folks at Blog Talk Radio and mentioned my RSS feed and saying, I use FeedBurner. I want to continue to use FeedBurner. Is that a problem? And I was told at the time, not a problem. We just make an RSS feed. That's it. So if you have it going to FeedBurner, which FeedBurner then feeds it into iTunes, that's how it will continue to be. I have never changed that. However, after doing what I thought was switching the RSS feed in FeedBurner from listening to Blog Talk Radio to listening to my website, I discovered that didn't happen. it was still listening to Blog Talk Radio. So I edited a few things so that there was a slight difference in the summary for my show, and I could see that it was BTR, Blog Talk Radio, that was the one that was still feeding iTunes. It wasn't my site. It wasn't the directly from Libsyn where the content is hosted, and it wasn't from FeedBurner. But I never changed that. And the only way that could have changed without my consent, without me doing it myself, would be if the Blog Talk Radio folks, without my permission, put a iTunes URL change line in the feed that they were feeding to FeedBurner. And FeedBurner wouldn't have taken that line out. And then it would have – and at that point, it would have pointed it to Blog Talk Radio feed. So I never gave them permission to do that, but apparently they've done it, which is a little frustrating. So now I'm having to deal with their technical support. I've gone ahead and let them know, and they've gotten back to me asking specifically what URL that I want it to be pointed to. So they didn't respond with, "We won't do that." If they do respond with that, we will have more words. You know, and this would be different if that's how I started off. If I started off on Blog Talk Radio and I always had my feed to iTunes coming straight from Blog Talk Radio, that would have been one thing. I would have expected me to bear the burden of dealing with that. But since I entered into this completely aware that I wanted to have 100% control over my RSS feed, and considering the fact Blog Talk Radio assured me it would leave me in 100% control of my RSS feed, it's profoundly frustrating. And I, you know, one thing I have had as an inquiry, and I've been begging you guys for your stories, what would you like to learn? What would you like to know? What subjects would you like to explore? I haven't really gotten much of a response, aside from I did have one listener want to find out how to start a podcast. So that might be something I delve into, but I'll tell you what. So here's the first piece of advice in that future podcast. Do not host with Blog Talk Radio, at least right now. We'll see. Maybe I'll reserve judgment. If they are absolutely straight up and allow me to correctly forward this RSS feed to where it should be, to where it was pointed in the first place, to where I never told them they could change it away from, then everything's cool, I guess. It's a little bit of a delay. It's a little bit annoying, but at the end of the day, at least it's taken care of. If they insist on not releasing my RSS feed from their control, that introduces a whole nother level of problem. In order to because that's my show, right, on iTunes. If I can't update iTunes to point to a new RSS feed, then unless I can do something directly through Apple, which I doubt, then I'm hosed. So it would mean I'd have to create a new RSS feed for the show that would be different from the RSS feed that's currently up there. So I'm hopefully going to have this ironed out this week as to what's exactly going to happen. Hopefully it will be invisible as I originally planned, as I always set my show up to make it possible to do. But if not, what I'll do is I'll continue to do the show on both Blog Talk Radio and Libsyn for a month. And in every show, I'll be giving a reminder at the beginning to go to the other show. And I'll have to slightly modify the name of my show, because you can't have the same show name twice in iTunes. So it'll be – maybe this is the universe telling me it's time to rename the show. I don't know. But on that subject, if you do have an idea of another new name for the show, I'd love to hear it. All right. So let's go ahead and jump in. This is a conversation we actually had not too long ago, where we discussed how there was a big difference between what appraisers were appraising homes at and what homeowners think their home is worth. And this introduces a whole lot of problems for buyers and sellers. And we covered a few strategies that I thought that I've used myself and that have worked in the past to try and work through those problems. But the net result is, you know, you buy a home and you say you're going to pay $300,000 for it. If it doesn't appraise for that, if you're getting a loan, the bank will only lend on 80% of the appraised value, right? So to use round numbers, if you're going to pay a house $100,000 for a house, the bank will loan you up to $80,000, right? And you have to come up with the remainder, unless you're getting an FHA loan, which is 3%, which means you only have to come up with 97%. But in any event, if the appraisal comes in less than that, then they're only going to do 80% of the appraised value, not the negotiated value. And what's interesting is the last time we talked about this, it was literally just – we were talking about May or June numbers. And let's see. I want to give you that number first. I saw it here. Where the heck did it go? Okay. Last month's gap was nearly double the difference between opinions in June, when appraisers' opinions were 1.4% less than homeowners' estimates. What's interesting is that in July, it jumped up to 2.33%. So a lot of the same reasons that we talked about before could apply here. It simply could be that the growth in prices is going at a certain level that is outpacing appraisers' ability to keep up with examples of properties that have sold, because that's how appraisals calculate value. They look at solds over the last 3 months of similar properties as close to that property as possible. That's how the game is played, and it's not – you know, again, we already had a conversation about how appraisers get the brunt of accusations in terms of, doing these false appraisals, when it's really just basing it on comparable properties. That's the best they can do. They take into account the condition of the property, et cetera, and all these other types of other factors, and as best they can sort of put them in line with the other properties that have sold over the last 3 months. But the fact that these numbers are getting more broadly separated is less a concern about what someone's opinion is and more a concern because you're going to find this being a bigger and bigger problem in terms of being able to buy your property. If you simply cannot get a loan that you can manage because the appraisal comes in under, what will that mean? That'll mean that we'll see more homes falling out of escrow because the lending part of it isn't satisfied. We will find a lot of stresses on the lending community because they're suddenly not lending when they think they're going to lend because they're being prevented to because of an appraisal that comes in at a certain level. So last time we sort of talked about ways how to get around it. I think what's more appropriate this time, and you can check that show out. I think it's less than a week old. So just go through and look at the archives. You can go to therebelbroker.com, click on the past shows link, and that is all the past shows for at least going back to the 20th when I started doing daily shows, or at least Monday through Friday shows. And you can check that out and see which one will work for you, or which one is the one I'm talking about. They're all, luckily now, since we're doing the shows the way we are, each title is very focused on what's actually being talked about in the show. We're not covering 10 different items in a show like we used to with just the 1 week longer shows. So this is going to be my suggestion. It still represents problems and it's still something you will potentially have to overcome. But for those of you out there trying to buy, I think that this means having backup offers in place, staying in contact with properties, even though you miss the bid. This is a time that we've lived through recently where appraisals were having this problem, and we were seeing a huge number of escrows failing to close for these kinds of reasons, and it represented a great opportunity. Now, here's what's great. You are on – in terms of information, in terms of knowledge, we've already talked about how knowledge is power, right? And one of the goals of this show is to help you crank that up to 11 so you're a step ahead of everyone else in the marketplace. What this means for you as buyers is you need to, if you find a house you like with numbers that work for you, you need to try to, you can potentially stay in the game by having a backup offer or staying in contact with the listing agent if for some reason they don't want a backup offer. These techniques are things I think you need to embrace. If your agent disagrees, thank him very much or her for their opinion, but I would suggest you insist on writing up backup offers or having backup offers in place on properties that you like where you miss out on being chosen as the folks to buy the property. I think it's going to be statistically significant enough that it's worth it for you to do a no-cost move by submitting an offer, but let me also suggest a couple of things. One of the biggest concerns buyers have in a situation like this, where you have paper sort of floating around out on multiple deals, is well, crap. What if one of these sellers finds themselves in this situation? So let me give you a step-by-step example, and this is a real-life example based on a deal I did a few years back when doing this made a lot of sense, when we were seeing a lot of deals failing because of lending not happening, because of appraisals that weren't coming through. You write the offer, and you have it as a backup offer, but you leave it so that it doesn't get – it's not a fully executed or a fully endorsed contract until you acknowledge the acceptance of the seller. Now, in California, there's a little checkbox for that right there on the end of the form. It may not be there on every state form from the Association of Realtors, but what you'll want to do is if either in language you write in an addendum or if there's a place in the contracts that you use that's just empty space for you to add stuff that you want to add, you just make sure that the wordage is associated with that contract that says in order for this contract to be considered valid, the buyer must acknowledge in writing the seller's acceptance of this offer. Okay? Here are some things you'll want to keep in mind though. You need to go into these thinking it's not going to appraise and also thinking – the only reason it's going to come back in the market is because the seller wasn't willing to go down to what the appraised value was. So as a buyer, you need to acknowledge the idea that you will be buying this property for overappraised value. By definition, in order for this property to become available to you to get into a chance to purchase it again, you are going to have to accept the idea of paying overappraised value. Now, the way to figure out if this makes sense or not is to simply look at the market data that your agent can pull up for you. You should be able to say to yourself, yeah, you know what? There just wasn't enough sold information. If you can get a hold of the appraisal, that would be fantastic. I've never had a seller or a listing agent refuse to share with me the appraisal, but I've had a few of them balk because it's technically not their appraisal. It's technically the previous buyer's appraisal. But again, if anyone gives you a reason that they can't give it to you because it's not theirs to give, I suppose that could be a valid thing. But you'll ask for it, and odds are they'll give it to you. As I said, I've simply just asked for it, and I've never had anyone say we can't give that to you. In almost every case, as part of the process of trying to make the escrow continue, the buyers will send a copy of the appraisal to the sellers, and I'll usually send a copy of the appraisal to the listing agent if I'm representing the buyers, just so they have a copy for their records if they don't get one through escrow. And that way you can have access to it, and you can see what properties they used, and you may be able to identify yourself what the issue is. There simply weren't enough homes that sold in the area. The homes that ended up getting used for the appraisal were maybe too far away or in neighborhoods that are less valuable, and the appraiser just really didn't get that. But that's the mindset you have to have going in. And what I'm going to suggest is this is only appropriate in areas where it's super competitive, and it's going to be important to do it now, because nobody in the marketplace is calibrated to things doing this. This is exactly the kind of thing that's a leading indicator. When we just start to see upticks in this, there's usually a 2 to 3 month lag time between everybody sort of getting it and it starting. And I think we're right on the cutting edge. There's a potential window here for you where the other folks representing buyers aren't going to put in a backup offer because backup offers haven't made sense. They tended to be a waste of time. Not true anymore. And the way the market is, and I think the way it's, and I think we're still at the far to the left side of this bell curve of this occurring, and I think it'll probably be something that goes on for quite a few months. It has to, right? Because the market data has to catch up enough for appraisers to be able to write appraisals that will validate purchase prices. But be prepared for that. You will be in a position where you'll have to pony up more money than the appraisal. So when you do a loan, you'll get your own appraisal. A second appraisal will happen. And odds are they may or may not know about the other appraisal. If I was the buyer's agent in that case, if I was your agent, I'm not sure I would tell the appraiser that there was another appraisal within the last couple of months. I'd rather have him come up with his own appraisal. And if his appraisal comes in under the other appraisal, I would show that appraisal to him. Because I wouldn't – here's the catch-22 you're in. If you show it to him, there's that chance he'll simply come in at the same amount to cover his butt. If he comes in over, then great, fantastic. You've gotten closer to purchase price and you can make things happen. Who knows? Their appraisal may even come in at yours or at your purchase price. Not likely. Not likely going to happen, but it could. And then the other possibility is he comes in even further below what the original appraisal was, and then you can use the previous appraisal as ammunition to have him modify his. So what I would then – by doing it that way, the power's in your hands, right? You've got your worst-case scenario defined by that previous appraisal, and then by opening the door for another appraisal for your loan, you've got two opportunities to get at least a slightly better situation, ranging all the way up to a completely awesome situation where he simply appraises it for what you offer. And then if it does appraise for under, you simply then show him the other appraisal. It might make him mad at your agent, but you know what? Your agent doesn't work for them. It works for you. So they should be willing to take the heat for that to get you the best deal possible. But I would walk into it based on the assumption you're going to have to pay something between what the appraised value was and what the purchase price previously was, or what the list price was. Because again, if they were willing to settle for that appraised value, the home would have closed. The home would have sold. It would have sold to the previous party. So in your head, you need to figure out a number that you're willing to do that's going to come to some point that'll satisfy the seller and allow you to still be able to purchase the property. What that means is if you're getting an FHA loan – now, if you were prepared – and this is one strategy that you can use. Let's say you were prepared to do a conventional loan. You were going to put down 10 to 20%. Well, that suddenly gives you a margin that you can work with where you can go with an FHA loan, put down 3%, and then use the remainder you were going to use to buy down your purchase price or to buy down to a conventional loan. You could then use that money to make up the difference. So, but I want you to exercise your options. I want you to look at your options. Have a conversation with your lender. Hopefully you have found a very creative lender who does a lot of different types of loans and has a lot of different types of strategies to solve these kinds of problems. But have that figured out before you're back, you go into contract with those folks. Tell them what you're trying to do. Tell your lender what you're trying to accomplish and say, listen, so we're going to remain in a backup position. The home was listed at 140. We don't know what the accepted offer was, but if it comes in under the agreed upon price, there's a chance it's not going to go through escrow. So we just want to be ready with options. And then tell them what I just told you. Whatever it appraises at, it will clearly have to sell to you for more than that, because if it was going to sell for the appraised value, it would have. And then now that's in your position to get it. Now, this is a strategy you're going to want to use when really low inventory is the predominant characteristic of your market right now, and there's just too many buyers per property. So you're probably in areas similar to mine. I know there's a lot of areas in the country where this isn't really happening that much, so maybe you don't need to go to these lengths, but it's absolutely another tool you can put in your quiver to make these things work, to get the deals that you want. And I'm going to go ahead and suggest, just in general, go ahead and let yourself be in a backup offer position. Here's what's interesting about backup offers. About 60 to 70% of the time, the listing agent doesn't even go back out and say, all right, we're going to make it active. You're our first backup, but we're going to go ahead and make it active for a week to try to draw in more offers. They tend to not do that. Even when I've represented sellers and we've had a transaction fall through and we had a backup offer, usually at the very least, I'll call all the folks who previously submitted an offer and let them know that the home's back on the market and see if that generates any interest. If we're not at a price point that pleases my seller, you know, I would suggest going back on the market. But I've actually had sellers say, you know what, I don't want to go through that. I don't want to put it back on the market. We've got a good faith backup offer at a certain price that I'm okay with, so let's just do it. And you'd be surprised how often that's actually the way it goes. Once you've now let's say you go ahead and do this backup offer. You've done the math in your head a little bit. You obviously can't conclude at the front end how much below offer price the home is going to appraise, but you can try to sort of come up with reasonable amounts in terms of saying, well, it'll work if it appraised for this, and then we can come up, just figure out what the max is that you can do, and see how you can make that work. And a lot of times that's very tough to do, and I get that, but try to do some scenarios, some fake, for instance, situations, and figure out what your plan might be. But once you've got it submitted, what you're going to want to do is continue to shop for properties just as if it wasn't there. So let's assume that's all done. It's been submitted. The price is there. It's there as a backup. What you're going to want to do is try to get some feedback from the listing agent on how the seller feels about the backup offer. Now, typically, they won't even accept it as a backup offer unless it's in a price range that they're okay with. But you want to try and pin this down. And just say this to the listing agent. Say, you know, we're very interested in being in a backup position in terms of purchasing this property. We'd just like to get a feel for how this, if the other transaction falls through, we'd like to be in a position where your sellers are comfortable simply signing this offer and letting us move from there. Try to do that up front. And this is something your agent can have a conversation with their agent about, and simply say, you know, we just want it to be easy. We want it to be easy for everybody. We want it to be easy for us. We want it to be easy for them. We'd like to just have, is there anything in our offer that doesn't fit with what the sellers want? We'd prefer to have our backup offer be something that the sellers can simply accept and be happy with if the other transaction falls through. So take a look at our suggested days in escrow, any other terms and conditions that we have in there. Just review that real quickly while your sellers are sort of still in this, we just accepted an offer mode, and see if you can work out some details to make it so that if the time comes, you can assure your sellers that they've got this back pocket offer that's just right there. So in a market like we have today, it's important for sellers to know they've got an insurance policy, right? So let us be your insurance policy by being 100% on the mark with what the sellers would be happy with in the situation where this first offer fails to come through. So take that feedback, and you can either write an addendum to the offer that you suggest, or you can rewrite your offer so it's clean and easy, and then just resubmit it as a backup offer. And there's usually either an addendum form, or, you know, and sometimes not at all. Sometimes they'll simply hold it. Just make sure you've got it all squared away. Nothing will be more frustrating to these sellers than to have a situation where their primary deal falls through, and they're going to really love the idea of having this easy, just sign it thing. And tell them that you've already got a plan to deal with any problems that might crop up. So you're about solving problems, you're about solutions, and you're going to make the deal work if you're lucky enough to fall into first position on this particular property. Okay, because I know last time we really talked about different strategies, just sort of how do you come up with the money, all these other types of things. And other options that you might have. I think we didn't really cover the contractual part of it, how you should continue to and particularly the fact that there's this dynamic where these transactions are going to fall through. Now, so let's take this from the seller's perspective. As a seller, what should you be telling your agent? Tell your agent you want at least one backup offer waiting in the wings in case, because this is what's happening. This isn't just a fanciful thing. These are the numbers that are coming out. It's getting worse every time. The distance between the agreed upon purchase price and the appraisal price is getting wider every single month. This is the fourth month in a row that it's increased. We're seeing differences now that are enough that will absolutely kill deals. Now, some of these little ones where it's 1%, 1 point something percent, as soon as it got over 2%, different game. Because here's what would happen in very common scenarios when it's 1%, 1.5%, just under 2%. What you'd get is real estate agents that might kick in part of their commission to cover the difference. Because remember, they make a percentage of the sale of the home, so they might be willing to kick in both the buying and selling agent sometimes will do this just to make the deal work. It doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen sometimes. But it tends to not happen when the difference is bigger than 2%. I don't typically meet agents that are willing to take a full percent cut unless it's a full commission thing to begin with. So if both sides were going to get 3%. They'd both probably be willing to cut each one of their commissions down to 2% because that's still within a reasonable range, but anything lower than that, and they tend to not be interested in doing that. So we're in a range now where this statistically is going to happen more and more. It's going to kill a lot more transactions. And here's the great thing: by approaching the listing agent with this pitch and giving them a backup offer and telling them, we've already thought of the idea that if the appraisal fails, we've got a plan so that we'll be able to get past any appraisal that comes up short. If that happens, they are going to be far more likely to go with you than to take a cut in their commission, particularly if when they do the math, they realize they'll make at least a little bit more going your way than taking a cut at this other price that was negotiated, right? So, and odds are that's the way it will work. Maybe not by huge piles of money, but by enough to make it interesting for a realtor to consider doing it that way. So the great thing is by approaching it this way, being proactive about it, you're putting the listing agent on your side if an appraisal failure happens. And you're demonstrating that you're kind of on the ball because you called this ahead of time. Realtors today are not going to be calling this. They're not going to be expecting this to happen. It's simply not – it hasn't been common enough. The numbers haven't been – the differences haven't been big enough. The trend is there, but you know what? To be honest with you, I don't know many realtors that even pay attention to trends. It's a very small number, and a bunch of them apparently listen to this show because a lot of the folks who I have listening to the show are real estate folks. And, you know, I'll occasionally get them telling me about what's going on with their market. I've got a guy in Sacramento who reaches out occasionally. I've got folks in Southern California. I've got folks in Nevada and Arizona and Washington and Maine and Florida, all over the place, who check in with me with what's going on. And they tend to be more on the ball, but the vast majority of agents are not. So the odds are in your favor that your knowledge of this, your ability to sort of anticipate and come up with a plan, is absolutely going to make you look like a rock star and have you be in a better position in terms of being able to get the property that you want and to put the agent from the other side in your corner for your offer. So I hope that was useful for you. I think that's a really good strategy for buyers, and I think sellers absolutely should be insisting that there be backup offers on all of their properties on all of their sales. And in a lot of markets, that's not going to be hard. So you should absolutely take advantage of that, and I think it'll work to your advantage. But again, you be mentally prepared for the fact that the appraisal is going to come in low. Most everybody's not. So if you've already fully digested that possibility and have ideas or things you've worked out with your lender or other strategies that you've put together to potentially overcome it, you're going to be in so much more of a position of power than everyone else. That'll blow your mind. So it'll just really increase your probabilities of getting what you want out of these. All right, so I would suggest heading on over to www.therebelbroker.com for more info on the show. Things are changing all the time over there. The next thing on my list is to sort of give the website a facelift. I would also be hugely appreciative if you could head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. Write a review of the show. I'm really pushing to make this show more popular, to get it ranked higher on iTunes. And the best way to do that is to have lots and lots of reviews. I'm not sure how many I've got up there. You know, I haven't actually looked in a while. I think it's still like under 50. I want to say 20 something, but I'm not sure. But I'd really love for my listeners to go and give it a quick review. Do a subscribe in iTunes. You'd be doing the show a great a great help, and it would let me create some more awesome content for you in the future that you can make use of in real estate and whatever else your goals are. So thanks again for listening, everyone. As always, I will talk to you tomorrow, and head on over to www.therebelbroker.com for more information, ways to contact me, find my Twitter feed, find the Facebook link, and all that other wonderful stuff. Talk to y'all tomorrow.